Well, I'll start by being a little bit silly with you. You ever think about what your celebrity power couple name would be if you were a celebrity? You know, when Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes were still married and they were Tomcat, or Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie are Brangelina. I guess we would be Rebecca Ann or Rebecca, or just R&R. What is a power couple, though? When you think about the term power couple, it's a couple that you look up to. It's a couple that knows what it's doing in life. It's a couple that has goals. And even though we might use the term in a bit of a silly way when it comes to celebrities, I do think, in a sense, we have power couples in our lives that we look up to. There are members of this congregation, couples here, married couples, that I look up to greatly. I look up to them for advice and for the kind of parenting that they've done. I look up to them because of the faith that they've shown in their marriage, in their personal lives, in their public lives. There are other people also in other congregations, my parents, my grandparents, Rebecca's parents. I consider all of these people to be mentors to me as a husband, trying to do his very, very best to love his wife and to cherish and nourish her, to raise his children in the fear and knowledge of the Lord. And when I think in the Bible about power couples, one couple comes to my mind that I would like to talk about for a little bit this morning before we talk about some practical applications. So have your Bibles open to the book of Acts. And I know that we'll be studying Aquila and Priscilla later on in our Acts class, in our Bible classes. But I do want to spend some time considering all of the passages that contain references to Aquila and Priscilla, beginning in Acts chapter 18 and verses 1 through 3. So please follow along with me here in Acts chapter 18. After these things, he, that is, Paul the Apostle, left Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a certain Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working. For by trade, they were tent makers. One thing that you notice immediately about this is that Aquila and Priscilla are a team, that they do things together. Now, I would take verse 3 to infer that both Aquila and Priscilla had a hand in the business of tent making, and perhaps it was Aquila doing the handiwork itself of making the tents, and Priscilla did something else. The bookkeeping, the advertising, whatever it was. But when it says that they were working, for by trade they were tent makers, I know that that would include Paul the Apostle. But it seems to me, just at a surface reading, that it was Priscilla and Aquila who worked together in that business. And I know many couples that own a business together and they divide up the labor evenly between the two of them, depending on what their strengths are. But I also think there's a great lesson here as far as a couple that sticks together in spiritual matters as well, not just professional or economic or domestic matters, but a couple that sticks together spiritually. Aquila and Priscilla felt threatened by Claudius, the emperor in Rome. He commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And a lot of people would feel, again, incredibly threatened by that, that they have to turn their lives upside down and move to a new community, facing persecution along the way, most likely. And yet they endure it. And not only do they endure it, but when they get to their new home, they are actively pursuing opportunities to build relationships with other believers in the Lord. And I admire that incredibly. How many of us, when we have moved to a new community for work or for whatever reason, put off spiritual matters for a while? Well, I've got to get the house all ready to go. And we've got to get our bills all lined up. And we've got to pick our cable provider. And we've got to put the house together and hang pictures and plant a garden. And it almost seems like it takes 6 months to a year before a couple finally starts getting their hands into the work of a congregation. I admire, by the way, young couples that have come here, young and old couples, by the way, who've moved here recently, who've just jumped right into the work. I think that we have seen something here at Monte Vista that is truly amazing. We have members here, and I think this is from top to bottom, young and old, new members as well as longtime members. But we have some people here who just love to work for God, and they love to do it together as well, husbands and wives. These are the power couples that I'm talking about. But let's go a little bit further on in Acts chapter 18 and notice some other things here about Aquila and Priscilla. Notice verse 18 now. And Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria. And with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Centria, he'd had his hair cut and he was keeping a vow. And they came to Ephesus, it says in verse 19. And he left them there. Now, I know this is a very short reference to these people. But think about what happened to them in this very short reference. They've moved from Rome, their original home, to Corinth, and tried to make a life there and built up a tent-making business. And now the Apostle Paul has asked them to uproot once again. And they end up all the way in Ephesus. Now, this is a short reference. Imagine what it would be like if somebody took a year and a half of your life where you switched jobs, moved to a new town, built a new home together, had a baby maybe, became a member of a new congregation, and summed it up in just a couple of sentences. That's what happened here, essentially, to Aquila and Priscilla. And the way I would sum this up here on the screen is that they did not find better things to do when they had an opportunity to go on an adventure for Christ. And that's really what this has to be, right? To uproot yourself again and go to another new city simply because the Apostle Paul says that there's work to be done for God? There's always plenty of reasons not to get more involved in the work of the church. There's always plenty of reasons not to learn a new skill or try something new. There's plenty of excuses that we can come up with why we shouldn't be the ones to go on a grand adventure for Christ. And yet here are Priscilla and Aquila, moving across the globe practically, moving across the Roman Empire, simply because there's an opportunity to serve God in this community. But go on to the end of Acts chapter 18 and notice verse 24. Now there was a certain Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by birth. He was an eloquent man, and he came to Ephesus. He was mighty in the scriptures, it says in verse 24. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, but being only acquainted with the baptism of John. And he began to speak out boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. I love that this couple, they taught together. Notice the text specifically says, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. That there is certainly an appropriate place for couples to join together to teach somebody else. Now, if that person is already a believer or an unbeliever, it doesn't matter. When the opportunity arises where your joint effort can get more done for God than just your work by yourself, then do it. Husbands and wives, find opportunities to serve God together. And the effect was marvelous, by the way. Apollos took it the right way because they presented it the right way. It wasn't a harsh criticism. It wasn't us versus you. They taught him the way of God more accurately. And because Apollos loved God the way that Priscilla and Aquila loved God, he accepted the truth. He changed. And he came to understand the way of Christ in a deeper and more accurate way. And everybody was benefited. Now, could Aquila have done this by himself? Perhaps. Could Priscilla have done it by herself? Maybe less so, considering the fact that it would have been perhaps seen as an inappropriate situation. But when Aquila and Priscilla worked together on this, really great things happened. But that's not the only time that we read about them. There are a few passing references later on in the epistles in Romans chapter 16 and verse 3. And even though these seem to be very passing references to Priscilla and Aquila, I think there's still a lesson to be learned in each one of them. Romans 16 and verse 3. As Paul is closing his letter to the Romans, he has this to say, "Greet Prisca and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ, who for my life risked their own necks, to whom not only do I give thanks, but also the churches of the Gentiles. And greet the church that is in their house." What a summation of this couple, right? Paul says, greet them because these are people who deserve a greeting. I wonder, are you the couple that anybody would remember. If they came to Monte Vista, it's just something to think about, okay? If somebody visited Monte Vista, they were just here for one day, one Sunday, and they passed through our congregation, would they even remember who you are? Would they write a letter later on back to Monte Vista saying, we really appreciated the way that so-and-so invited us out to lunch. We loved the way that so-and-so greeted us so warmly and made us feel at home with the congregation of Christians here. Are you the kind of couple that the Apostle Paul, in writing a letter to Monte Vista, would say, greet that couple? He does that for Priscilla and Aquila here. They risk their own necks for Paul's life. Which kind of leads me to wonder if there's more to the Acts chapter 18 story than you see just on the text. That there was more that happened in Corinth, and more that happened on the way to Ephesus, and more that happened in Ephesus itself. That there's more story than just what you read on the page in the book of Acts. They risked their necks for the life of the Apostle Paul. And they had a congregation that met in their home. That's pretty admirable, isn't it? I don't know any one of us who has a home big enough to fit 200 people. They might not have had a congregation of 200 people. But whatever the size was, they made room in their homes for that congregation. And that's very admirable. And one more reference in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. And remember, the backstory is that when Paul first met Priscilla and Aquila, they were living in Corinth. So they have a history in Corinth. They have a background in Corinth. Corinth knows who these people are. Now he says here in verse 19, the churches of Asia greet you. Aquila and Priscilla greet you heartily in the Lord with the church that is in their house. One final reference here to Priscilla and Aquila that I really love about them is that they don't forget the friends that they left behind. They had to move away from Corinth. There was an opportunity to serve God in Ephesus, and they took that opportunity, and they jumped on board wholeheartedly. But did they ever forget about their friends in Corinth? Keep up with your friends. No matter where you move in this life, keep up with your old friends. Keep up with that couple that you knew years ago that gave you great advice when you were a newlywed. Keep up with those friends of yours who helped you during a very hard time in your parenting when your children were young and they were small and they were a handful. Keep up with the people who helped introduce you to each other. Rebecca and I have some special people in our lives who, if it wasn't for them, we might not have ever met. Keep up with those people the way that Priscilla and Aquila kept up with Corinth. Don't forget about the friends that you've had in your life. Now that's a power couple, isn't it? But how do we get to that point? And what are some of the practical applications to this idea of being a power couple for Christ? Well, we'll start with this idea. Keep God in the center. And we'll go through these things pretty quickly because I have a bunch of material that I want to get through and I really, really want to get to the end because I always leave my last slide out because I run out of time. And the last slides are always really good. The original married couple in the book of Genesis knew God intimately. God was in the center of their lives because for them it was just Adam and Eve, a bunch of animals, and God. Now here's the trouble that we have today. And it's not a bad thing necessarily, but it's something we need to be aware of. We don't have the benefit of being Adam and Eve in the sense that we're surrounded by people. We're surrounded by distractions. Adam and Eve didn't have children. Adam and Eve didn't have a boss. Adam and Eve didn't have to go to so-and-so's party. Adam and Eve didn't have to keep up with these people. Adam and Eve didn't have a favorite sports team to follow. Adam and Eve were just Adam and Eve and God. That was the original married couple in the Bible. And having kids is not a bad thing. And having friends is not a bad thing. But be aware that those things can become a distraction to our relationship to God as He is in the center of our marital relationship. God is the thing that binds us together in our marriages. Don't forget about Him, even as you welcome other people into the fold of your intimacy. Go to Matthew chapter 6. And while we generally think of this passage in very personal terms, I do want to notice it here in terms of a married couple and the concerns that married couples tend to have about kids, about keeping food on the table and paying bills. So read Matthew chapter 6, not just for yourself, but read Matthew 6 as if it was a married couple with these concerns. He says, beginning in verse 25, "For this reason I say to you, do not be anxious for your life, as to what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor for your body as to what you shall put on. Is life not more than food, and the body more than clothing?" Couldn't Jesus also be saying, don't be anxious about that bill that you've got to pay? Don't be anxious about that health problem that you're both facing together, because let's admit it, when one person in a couple is sick, everybody bears that burden. Everybody feels it. Could Jesus not be saying, stop being anxious about what you'll do with your kids or how you'll pay for college or how you're going to broach the subject of sex and drugs and alcohol when the right time comes? As a married couple, don't be anxious about tomorrow, because today and today's concerns, well, those things need to be taken care of first. Now he goes on to say in verse 28, why are you anxious about all these things, about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that even Solomon in all of his glory did not clothe himself like one of these. But if God so arrays the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, will he not much more do so for you, O couples, husbands and wives, fathers and mothers of little faith? We worry so much about our homes. Are our homes clean enough, tidy enough, fancy enough to have people over? And I do wonder if that sometimes keeps us from practicing the hospitality that we really should be practicing. Because we don't believe that we can welcome people into our homes. We just don't. And so we neglect a very important part of what Christianity is supposed to be. Now he goes on to say here in verse 31, do not be anxious then, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or with what shall we clothe ourselves, or with what shall we clothe the kids and pay the bills and get food on the table? For all these things the Gentiles eagerly seek. Your heavenly Father knows that you need these things, though. So seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. That's not just for you personally. Now, I know that for those who are not married, obviously apply this to you individually. But for the couples here, for the married couples here, keep God in the center. Seek God first as a couple, and all these things will be added to you. Now, there's a number of practical applications. Ask yourself, is God a part of everything that we're doing? Does our relationship to God go beyond just prayers at the dinner table? Are we really showing our kids how we make God, our Savior, Jesus Christ, a priority in our lives? We must make Him a priority no matter the cost. We must make Him a priority. Or are sports practices more important? And is homework more important? And is a job more important, or a favorite TV show more important, or personal comforts, or wealth? If those things are more important to you as a parent, I have some bad news for you. It's not going to get any better for your kids. And it's like Alan and I have both pointed out on different occasions, neither of us have ever seen in our experience a couple that did not prioritize God and their kids prioritized God better. I have never seen that before. That if you don't make God a priority in your life, just don't expect your kids to just magically and miraculously learn how to do it on their own. They're watching us. And they'll emulate us. But the next question I have is, are you still just two people? Because maybe that's one of the problems in a lot of couples today, is that they don't want to let go of their individuality. They're so hesitant to let go of their individuality that they forget that the original marriage in Genesis chapter 2 was one person and another person. leaving father and mother, joining together and becoming one flesh. And Jesus points this out in Matthew chapter 19. That when you go back to the original marriage, this was what was intended. This was what was meant for married couples. To leave father and mother and to no longer be two people, two individuals with individual concerns and individual priorities and individual activities, but to become one flesh, joined together by God. We see that played out in Ephesians chapter 5 as well, where we're supposed to nourish each other and cherish each other the same way that you cherish the bones in your body and the flesh that surrounds your soul. You nourish and cherish your wife. That's what love is. I want to read a passage here out of the book of Proverbs. And the writer of the book of Proverbs really, really gives us something to think about here as he compares the devotion, the nourishing, the cherishing, the excitement that we feel for our spouse versus the allurements of somebody else. He says in Proverbs 5, verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? As in, when you have something so good, so pure, so beautiful in your life, should you waste your time with anything else? Let them be yours alone and not for a stranger's with you. Let your fount be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. He will die for his lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he will go astray. And I believe at the core of all of this is a failure to understand two people becoming one. When we still want to embrace our individuality so that I can go out and do what I want, when I want, and it doesn't matter what my spouse thinks, then we have truly lost sight of what it means to be married. And when you read in the book of the Song of Solomon, and all these verses are up on the screen, and I encourage you to notice them and study them on your own time, but notice all the times that the man and the woman in this psalm speak of how they are best friends. He is my beloved and he is mine. Devotion, my friends, devotion. A couple of things then to think about on this subject of are you still two versus one. Facebook tends to reveal some things and every now and then it's kind of superficial, but even the superficial things are good reminders, aren't they? On Valentine's Day of Facebook, a lot of people were putting as their profile pictures, pictures of themselves with their spouse with the caption, I love us. And I know that love has to mean more than just a little shout out on Facebook, but I really like the way that's put. I love us. When you marry, you are no longer just you. And the marriages that do fail tend to fail because they start with feelings of insecurity about losing independence. They are not truly in love with the idea of us. It is still me. It is still you. We must seek our spouse's greatest potential. Never stamping out potential, never being jealous or envious of their accomplishments or the things that they are doing. We need to be their loudest cheerleader, as somebody once told me. Rebecca, do you remember that when Mark Dunnigan told us to be our loudest cheerleaders for each other? Don't be threatened by the hobbies or the pursuits of your significant other. Don't be threatened by their family members or their friends. Don't be threatened by physical changes that inevitably take place throughout a lifetime together. And sometimes those changes are good. Perhaps you're threatened or jealous when your spouse decided to lose a bunch of weight and get back in shape. Perhaps you're threatened or frustrated when a spouse decided not to be in shape. My friends, these physical changes are only physical. They're only skin deep. They do not represent who we are on the inside in our spiritual substance. And wise couples know that the relationship between them is worth more than their hobbies or their work or their money, and they go out of their way to jealously guard the sanctity and the joy of their relationship together. There are things that I do by myself. My work is one of them. Running is another one of them. Rebecca won't go running with me because she hates it. And yet, in spite of the way that she doesn't like my running, she still asks me how it's going. What was your workout like today? What's your next race? What are your goals that you have? I don't know the first thing about lip gloss also. Or crocheting, for that matter. You could give me all the skeins of yarn in the world. I do know what the word skein means, though. I have learned that. And crocheting is not knitting. Had to learn that one the hard way, too. But I don't know the first thing about crocheting or lip gloss, and yet I like to know. What are you working on right now? What are you crocheting right now? Who's that for? What's your next big project? How are things going with the lip gloss sales? I don't know the first thing about those things. But I know the first thing about Rebecca. And I love Rebecca in every part of her. And for some strange reason, she loves me in every part of me. We need to have eyes for our spouse only. We need to appreciate our spouse's physical characteristics even as we age together. Remember that the scars and the wrinkles on your body, they tell a story. And they should tell your favorite story, which is the story of us. We need to put a premium on honesty also in our relationships. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25, notice the way the Apostle Paul puts it here as he speaks of honesty, saying, "Speak therefore truth with one another, laying aside all falsehood, for we are members of one another." Now, if that's true of your neighbor, to speak truth with your neighbor and lay aside all falsehood, how much more true is that of you and your spouse? There is no neighbor that is closer to you than your spouse, physically and spiritually. And I like the way that the husband puts it in Proverbs 31 and verse 11. As he is enumerating all of the many great characteristics of his wife in whom he shows a great deal of pride, he says in Proverbs 31 and verse 11, "The heart of her husband trusts in her." We need to have honesty in our relationships. We need to be careful to give our spouse the benefit of the doubt in all things. You remember what happened to Joseph and Mary? When Joseph found his betrothed pregnant somehow or another, even though he knew he had never been with her, poor Joseph assumed the worst and prepared the divorce papers. And yet God told him this was by the Holy Spirit. We need to assume the best about each other. Give each other the benefit of the doubt. Now that's your responsibility, to give your spouse the benefit of the doubt. But it is your spouse's responsibility equally to never give you a reason to wonder or a reason to doubt. That is for both of us. Now that would include acting defensive about the internet or your cell phone. Always being possessive, never wanting your spouse to look at your search history. Don't be surprised if your spouse wonders if you have a pornography addiction if you're always acting possessive or weird about your phone. Or maintaining close friendships with those of the opposite sex. We need to have boundaries in that regard. Or keeping strange hours all the time. Or needing to keep financial secrets and having my money and you can have your money and please stop looking at my bank account numbers. Or always pushing sexual boundaries. Asking for strange things in the bed. Always pushing your spouse's comfort level. Don't be surprised if your spouse starts wondering about you, doubting your faithfulness, if you're always pushing the limits in these regards. And be who you are everywhere. That's a big part of honesty, isn't it? That who you are at home is who you are at work, and who you are in those places is who you are at church as well. When you're with God's people or people of the world, you're still the same person. Be genuine. Honesty breeds intimacy. As one version of Proverbs 24, verse 26 says, "An honest answer is like a kiss on the lips." And nothing is more intimate than being honest with each other. Honest. And the last point is this. See? I made it to the last slide. Serve where you can. Serve where you can. And while it is good at times to compare your marriage to other marriages, and I think that happens when you want to make improvements. When you look at other people's marriages and you say, what are they doing right that we need to be emulating? That's fine to make those comparisons. But be really careful that in comparing your marriage to somebody else's marriage that you do not become jealous or envious of another couple. That's when you see those power couples. The couples who've had the most influence on you, the couples that you admire, the couples you look up to, you make a transition somewhere along the way from looking up to people because they're a power couple to being envious of them because they are a power couple. A true power couple in God's eyes is not doing it for the attention. Aquila and Priscilla were not doing it. Everything that they were doing for God, everything they were doing for Paul, they weren't doing it so that they would get a little reference in the book of Romans or get a little reference in the book of 1 Corinthians. They weren't doing it so they could sit there and pat themselves on the back and say, you know, 2,000 years from now when people are reading Paul's letter to the Romans, they're still going to be reading about Priscilla and Aquila. They weren't doing it because they wanted attention, and they weren't doing it because they wanted to grow their own egos. How can you be envious or jealous of people who aren't doing it for the attention? Where does envy have a part in that at all? Where does jealousy have a heart or a part in that at all? Really, it's humility. And not everybody's going to be Aquila and Priscilla. Not everybody has the opportunity to move to Ephesus to help preach the word. Not everybody has the opportunity to risk their necks for the Apostle Paul. They did. And they took advantage of the opportunity. Take advantage of your opportunities. Serve in a way that is fitting for you. Take into account the gifts that you have, the talents that have been given to you, and also your ability, your financial ability. Nobody expects you to pay for somebody else's wedding if you don't have the money to pay for somebody else's wedding. And if you can't practice hospitality for 200 people because your house isn't big enough and you don't have the money for it, then can you practice hospitality for two at a time? And over a couple years, don't you think you're going to be able to practice a lot of hospitality, but on a smaller scale? Practice hospitality. Serve God. Work with people and work for God in the ways that you can. And never be jealous of those who have the opportunity, the financial ability, or the talents to do something that you can't do. Serve God how you can. Be your own Priscilla and Aquila, and people will recognize you for that. They'll recognize you for that. And live in such a way that it sneaks up on you when younger couples tell you how much they look up to you. I don't really know if we're at that point yet, Rebecca, but I know there are couples in this congregation that I talk about like that. And maybe it surprises you. Maybe it snuck up on you that you were just doing the right thing because it was the right thing to do. And suddenly some young couple at church comes up to you and says, you know, we really respect you. We admire you. We're trying to emulate you. Live in such a way that sneaks up on you. You were never doing it for the attention. You were never doing it because you had an ego. You were just doing it because you wanted to be a power couple for God. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. You have an opportunity at this time to let your spiritual needs be made known to God and to this congregation. If there are things that you need to put behind you, to put them in the past, then do it right now. And if you need to become a Christian, then look no further than Mark 16, verse 16, because God gives us the way through His Son, as He says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. So whatever need you might have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand.